Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum
and Matt Levine.
And we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty, your source for real estate, home rehab, fixing and flipping for investor clients and residential buyers. Reach out to the Zach Pack today for real estate services. Follow the Zach Pack on social media and contact the Zach Pack for investment opportunities. Links in the bio. Hey, everybody. Hey, Kaiju campers. Thank you for hanging out. Please rate and review wherever you listen to Camp Kaiju. You can also share this podcast with a friend. Great way to support the show. And go ahead and keep sending us your listener comments from Mina's mailbox. You can do so at Instagram or at our email, campkaiju@gmail.com. Hiya, Matt.
Hey, Vincent. How's it going?
Good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. Hey, you changed shirts.
Yeah, this is my pajama shirt.
Oh, nice. We'll roll right into bedtime, hopefully.
Yeah, I watched GMK late the other night. I've been going through a lot of the Millennium Era Godzillas late at night. And yeah, I often fall asleep on the couch watching them. So I get into my jammies ahead of time.
I love it. Yeah. I think I told you recently that I watched one of the movies on the DVD that I borrowed from you.
Yeah.
I fell asleep like 10 minutes in, so I didn't actually really watch it. So I definitely need to get going on that DVD.
It's hard sometimes. What gets me is the subtitles. When it's that late, reading puts me to sleep.
Me too. Yeah, it can be a struggle sometimes, yeah.
Because like King Kong, we are 90 years old.
It feels that way sometimes.
All right, let's get to it.
Cool. I'm excited to talk about GMK, Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All-Out Attack.
Gesundheit.
That name just rolls off the tongue. It's perfect.
I think it's overcompensating for something, personally.
I think you might be right about that, yeah.
I also think, I don't know how you feel about this movie, but I can tell you right now, I may not be popular with our listeners who are tuning into this episode. Now, again, just so you know, everybody listening, Matt and I don't bash any movie. That's not what this is about. It's about giving an honest and fair assessment of its strengths and weaknesses. And I think anything is fair game when it comes to art, which is subjective.
Indeed.
And that's important to know. That's what I'm going to say before I talk any more about this movie.
Well, I'll just say at this point that I think you and I are probably like-minded in that like brief intro that you just gave, but we'll find out shortly.
Yeah. What's going on with Camp Kaiju these days?
Well, we got a lot of good content on our website, campkaijumoviereviews.com. Vincent just wrote a really great piece, which I loved, kind of connecting the 1935 film Mad Love to the 2023 film Tearsucker, which we talked about recently on the podcast. So check out that review. A lot more written content on the website, as well as, of course, links to all of our past episodes.
Yeah. And I think I need to write a new review because we're talking about Starship Troopers in a few weeks, directed by Paul Verhoeven, who, oh my God, this is perfect. Who directed RoboCop from the late 80s. And this is what I wanted to say in our last episode about King Kong and stop motion. Like, the stop motion as a way to convey quote unquote monsters did not change as the leading industry standard from the 1920s until the late 80s, early 90s. And I was watching RoboCop from 87, I think. And there's a robot portrayed by stop motion animation. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it looks great.
Looks so cool. Same technology that brought King Kong to life. Exact same.
And then computers had to come along and ruin everything.
Damn it.
Yeah, as they always do. Just kidding, sort of, but not really. It's a constant motif for me on this show, how much I hate CGI, which we probably will talk about on this very episode.
Yes. Oh, will we? So anyways, yeah. So shout out for King Kong. We just dropped that last week. We got Starship Troopers in a couple weeks. And then next week, we're going to talk about Tremors. So, hey, for lovers of practical effects, that's a great movie for us.
Can't wait.
Special thanks to those of us. Special thanks to our supporters on Patreon. We see you. We love you. We appreciate your contributions and your support for this show. If you out there are listening and would like to support likewise, you can check out patreon.com/campkaiju. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. But thanks, Jason, Kelly, Peggy, and our anonymous donor. Anything else you want to add? Or
let's see. Do we have anything else coming up? I have a question for you, actually. It's a tangent. Hey, do you know the movie Night of the Lepus or Lepus? I don't know how you pronounce it.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I DVR'd it, so I'm hoping to watch that soon. And I hope it's as bad as I've heard it is. I think it's going to be a very entertaining watch. So I probably will have more to say about that movie in the near future.
All right. I hope to read a review of that on campkaijumoviereviews.com.
That's what I'm getting at. I think it will happen. I don't know exactly when, but it will happen.
Yeah, because in September, we're going to cover The Birds, which I think is the archetype for all of the nature run amok films that would come. I've never seen Night of the Lepus. I'm assuming it's about a horde of killer rabbits.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So probably in the same mold as Killer Birds.
I would assume so. But The Birds is a fantastic movie. I don't think that's true of Night of the Lepus, but I could be surprised. You never know. Does it have the Hitchcock touch? It might.
Time will tell.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's all I got. Is there anything coming up in movie theaters? There's The Last Voyage of the Demeter, right? Kind of a Dracula type movie coming up.
And The Meg 2, The Trench.
Yeah. I haven't seen the first one, but I want to.
It's okay. Actually, it's not. I don't like it.
Okay. Maybe I'll skip it then.
You watch it though. We could talk about it.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Can't think of anything else.
All right. So personal histories with the film. I could talk about why I brought it, but Matt, what's your personal history with this film?
For quite a while, I only knew it by its title. And I think the first time I heard or read the title, I was like, are you serious? Is that the entire title of this movie? I knew it was from the Millennium era of the Godzilla franchise. That's kind of all I knew about it. So I was going in almost totally cold.
Same. And that's why I chose it, because as big a Godzilla fan as I am, the Millennium era, and what that means is the Godzilla series from Toho that ran from 1999 with Godzilla 2000 up until 2004 with Godzilla Final Wars. This was a series of Godzilla films that, except for a couple of entries, didn't share any continuity with each other, unlike the Heisei era, which had a clear overarching storyline. And these movies, they're from the early 2000s. My impression was always, I don't know, does this make sense to you? A Sci-Fi Channel original movie.
Yeah.
That was always my impression.
Right. And I think this and other Millennium era movies were originally shown on the Sci-Fi Channel in the United States.
Right. That's where they debuted. And I'm like, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But also these movies came out when I was older. And I was not into Godzilla movies when I was in middle school and high school when these flicks came out. So they really just flew under my radar until literally last year when I got a collection on DVD. And then this past week when I finally watched them all.
Oh, so you watched all of them recently?
Yes.
Okay.
Ran the gamut.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm excited to hear about the others as well. But Like as I've talked about on the podcast before, like I came to Godzilla sort of belatedly, you know, like I definitely was not a fan of the franchise in 2001. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't really know anything about it. So I feel like maybe if I had seen this when I was young, I probably would have liked it more, but I don't know, like watching the old ones now, and by old I mean like Mothra, Rodan, like 50s and 60s, you know. And they're very magical to me. They're very like vibrant, they're beautiful and colorful, creative. And this just did not have the same vibe to me. Yeah. Maybe that's all I'll say for right now.
Okay. Yes. Hold that thought. We'll just read a brief plot synopsis that I whipped up here. So it's been 50 years since the events of 1954, and now in Japan, a new Godzilla is arriving to wreak havoc. This new Godzilla, however, is not just a being of the atomic bomb, but a physical incarnation of the souls killed by the Japanese Empire in World War II. And these souls now seek to remind modern Japan of the horrors of those war crimes and atrocities, because it seems that those in modern Japan are all too willing to forget the past.
Meanwhile, the country is suffering from several other monsters. Baragon burrows through the mountains, Mothra attacks beachcombers, and King Ghidorah, the Golden Dragon, lies in hibernation inside a frozen underground cave. Together, these three kaiju are the guardian monsters of ancient Japanese myth. They have now awakened to fight Godzilla and protect Japan.
By the end, however, each of these guardian monsters has been defeated by Godzilla in single combat. King Ghidorah fares the best, but even it cannot defeat a vengeful Godzilla. And in the end, the human stories converge with Admiral Taizo Tachibana. He's inside an attack sub, and he gets swallowed by Godzilla. And inside Godzilla, Tachibana fires a rocket that exits Godzilla's chest. And through this gaping chest wound, Godzilla's atomic breath passes instead of its mouth. And then Godzilla falls and explodes from its own power. Oh, but wait! On the ocean floor lies Godzilla's still beating heart. The end?
The ending is great, and you know it's not until the end that we hear Akira Ifukube's classic score. It's the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
Oh, I forgot about the score.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the story in a nutshell. Obviously, there's a lot of twists and turns. I didn't comment on any of the human plot elements. Ultimately, I don't find them to be as important to the overall story as just the monster mayhem we see.
Yeah,
What do you think?
I totally agree. Yeah, Tachibana, I think is his name. His daughter Yuri is like a journalist, and she works for like a digital, you know, video production company. And so the movie follows her pretty extensively as she tries to track down Godzilla and like come up with this big news story. But we've seen that before in other Godzilla movies, and it's not terribly compelling, I don't think.
It's her character almost seems to purely serve as a cipher for the audience's view of the monsters,
Yeah.
right? It's just like, oh, you're just here to so we can have somebody to view this through.
Yeah, exactly. Like she, you know, I mean, she's kind of a mouthpiece for some of the themes of the movie. Like she's the one that kind of talks about like the embodiment of the souls from the Pacific War and stuff like that. Or she's one of the characters anyway that does. But yeah, there's not even really much of a love story. Like there are two men who kind of like gravitate around her, but the less said about them, the better maybe. So yeah.
All right, yeah, let's go on to the select cast and crew, and then I'm sure we'll talk about these things some more.
Sure. Yeah. So the film was directed and co-written by Shusuke Kaneko. He was the director of the recently popular and acclaimed Gamera films. The special effects are by Makoto Kamiya. Kamiya had worked as assistant director to Koichi Kawakita on Godzilla vs. Biollante and with Kaneko on the recent Gamera trilogy. And I do want to say that the effects in Godzilla vs. Biollante I like a lot. That's a very like creative, fantastic movie, you know?
Yeah, and the Gamera Heisei trilogy are renowned critically and popularly. We'll talk about the first one later on this year, Gamera Guardian of the Universe. But yeah, those effects are great.
Yeah.
The film was written by Kaichi Hasegawa, obviously along with Kaneko. The cinematography is by Masahiro Kishimoto. It's edited by Isao Tomita with music by Kao Otani.
The cast of the film includes Ryudo Uzaki as Admiral Taizo Tachibana. The cast also includes Chiharu Niyama as Yuri Tachibani. And maybe most importantly in this film, the monsters are played by Mizuho Yoshida as Godzilla, Akira Ohashi as King Ghidorah, and Rie Ota as Baragon.
Yeah. There's a lot of characters in this movie. A lot of them are very secondary that disappear for large swaths of this film. So really I only included the mother and sorry, the father and daughter, Taizo and Yuri Tachibana. Even their relationship, they aren't on screen together very often. And when they are, there's a very strained relationship. You get the sense that he's a very maybe distant father, loves his daughter. There's moments of that, but also there's a distance between them that I didn't find very compelling.
I agree. I think the movie does not do a very good job of like investing in its human characters and their relationships. And I don't necessarily want to give away the ending of the movie, but like there is a reunion between the two of them that should be very poignant, but it's not. Like the father kind of ruins it right away by just being like, "Yeah, all right, daughter, I'm gonna like salute the monsters that saved us or whatever, you know? Like you just survived and your daughter is here trying to like connect with you, man, and you're like ignoring her." So the movie does not do a very good job of like playing up those emotions.
Literally, she goes to hug him and he puts his hand up and says no. Now, sure, it's because he says I'm not decontaminated from the radiation, so don't come near me. But you're right, like this is should be the emotional catharsis of the movie, and physically the way it's directed is as deflating as the rest of that relationship throughout the whole movie. I'm like, what? What? Okay, that's not how one would popularly end a film.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. I maybe could save this for like later in the conversation, but I feel like the movie is trying to hold sincerity at like arm's length. You know, it's not trying to be like an emotional, dramatic movie, which I guess is fine, but like instead of that, it's trying to be cheesy and tongue in cheek and kind of ridiculous. And I feel like if you try to do that really hard, then it doesn't come off very well. Then it kind of just comes off as like glib and sarcastic, you know?
That's a great way to put it because I was thinking the same things. I feel like it's trying too hard to be edgy and I don't know, better than those more sincere elements of a movie. That did not work for me on a lot of levels.
Totally agree. So I guess you already know how we feel about the movie for all of you listening out there. It came early this time around. That's okay.
All right. Let's get back to the script here. So we're gonna talk about the production backstory and release of this film. So GMK is the third film of this new series. The previous film was Godzilla versus Megaguirus. It was not a hit. It's a very formulaic movie, Godzilla versus insert giant monster. I don't think it's as bad as people think. But it was not a hit in 2000. And in 2001, Toho wanted a surefire hit. So they hired Kaneko to direct the film. Obviously, he's coming off the Gamera trilogy. He's the kaiju guy you want to helm your Godzilla movie. early ideas for this story had Godzilla battling a Kamacuras, the giant praying mantis creature from Son of Godzilla. But then Kaneko got the idea for these three guardian monsters, whom he initially envisioned to be Baragon, Varin, and Anguirus. We know Baragon from Frankenstein Conquers the World. Obviously, Anguirus is a well-known kaiju. Varin only had one starring movie, Varin the Unbelievable, from the late 50s, directed by Ishiro Honda. It's a very forgettable movie, and Varin has only had like the briefest of cameos in other Godzilla movies, but he's not a headliner. Let's put it that way.
I've never even heard of him before.
Exactly. So Toho said, "Thanks, Kaneko, but why don't you swap Varin and Anguirus with Mothra and King Ghidorah, because we need marquee value here." So that's the sort of the origin of this film and its characters.
And I read something that like one of Kaneko's other ideas was that Godzilla would battle like an astronaut who was turned into a monster when he was like infected by cosmic rays or something. And that story sounds awesome to me. I would much rather watch that than just like giant monsters all out attack, you know, like that'll add some creativity to it.
And that's my thing with my one thing with Godzilla, the Godzilla franchise, is 9 out of 10 times the monsters Godzilla fights is going to be Mothra, King Ghidorah, or Mechagodzilla. Mm-hmm. And there are just so many other great kaiju that I wish would get their moments. But it reminds you that not Hollywood, but any, you know, the Japanese film industry is a business, and they're not going to take chances if they don't have to.
Yeah, alas, that makes sense. And like, you know, I love Mothra and King Ghidorah and their like original iterations. So like, it should be cool to have them all come back in this movie, but whatever made them sort of so ferocious and like intense and cool looking the first time around is nowhere to be found in this movie, I think.
Yeah. Baragon is welcomed. I really enjoy seeing that character in this movie.
Yeah, and he's the only one that's not in the title of the movie, but he's like maybe the best part. Yeah.
I know.
What can you do? In any case, the movie was filmed in 2001 and released in December of that year. It was one of the largest grossing Godzilla films of the Millennium series in Japan. According to IGN, the film rescued the series since the two previous Millennium films were kind of financial bombs. So apparently Toho's like, you know, all-consuming desire to just make money off of this came to fruition, but maybe at the expense of cinematic quality.
Well, the movie is very well regarded within the fan base. It is is highly rated on Letterboxd for what it's worth. It is often cited as one of the best Godzilla movies, and so Matt, we are not in the majority here.
Yeah, I read that too, and it is mystifying to me. I don't get it, but we'll talk about why.
Yeah, we must defend where we stand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to our sponsor break from Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty, your source for real estate, home rehab, fixing and flipping for investor clients and residential buyers. Reach out to the Zach Pack today for real estate services. Follow the Zach Pack on social media and contact the Zach Pack for investment opportunities. Ooh, links in the bio. Oh, I think I see something poking out of our mailbox. Minya's mailbox. I have a message here from It's Kaiju Season on Instagram. And our friend on Instagram says, "I was probably too young to remember, but I know the first Godzilla movie I watched was All Monsters Attack, aka Godzilla's Revenge. Gabara has since always been one of my favorite kaiju. I also, as a child, loved to play with Bandai vinyl figures in the yard or water, as they were much more durable back then. Most of my collection is well played with, and I've only recently begun collecting for collection reasons rather than being a kid who just loved big monsters. And honestly, I wish Toho would have used more practical effects, or at least better CGI in this new Godzilla movie. It just doesn't look even as good as Shin, but that's only based on the teaser trailer we received, if you have seen it and know what I mean. So, several things in there from its kaiju season. Who is referring to the new Toho Godzilla movie, Godzilla Minus One, which hits Japanese theaters in November and US cinemas in December. Thank you for writing in. And everyone else, please let us know your thoughts on GMK, on Godzilla, whatever you want to ask us about. We'll read your comments on the show.
Did you have a big action figure collection when you were young?
I did. And I just sold off a bunch of them to afford new sound equipment.
That's a fair trade-off, I suppose. Yeah.
I told Ellen, I've just made a bunch of money. I'm going to pour it into another nerd obsession of mine.
As you should, yeah. What else are you going to spend it on?
Right, not groceries. I don't forget that.
Yeah, no way. Who needs that? What kind of action figures did you have when you were young?
All kinds of superheroes, mostly Marvel, mostly Spider-Man, X-Men, things like that. I had some Godzilla toys as well, but big superhero nerd.
Cool. I had a ton of G.I. Joe action figures. That was like what I played with when I was a kid. I think like at the peak, I had like at least 50 G.I. Joes, as well as like several like headquarters and like vehicles and stuff like that, you know?
Ooh.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then my parents moved and sold all of them without letting me know.
Oh, no.
Travesty. It's a bit of a tangent, but I'm reliving my glory days now after the message that we got on Instagram.
Ah, that's so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
If a little painful.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I always love hearing those messages, though. That's great.
Yeah, pretty cool. So, yeah. This movie does wear its themes on its sleeve, I must say. It's not subtle.
No.
The first one that comes to mind is the souls of those killed by the Japanese during World War II.
Which, you know, I mean, I think usually in Godzilla movies, Japan is presented as the victim and Godzilla is kind of like a metaphor for like the suffering that the country of Japan went through. So I do think it's like hypothetically interesting that this movie is trying to say like, you know, modern Japan needs to like recognize the suffering that it caused as well as the suffering that it experienced. And so it's like kind of a new theme. I do appreciate that. There's also the scene where like, and this is one of the better parts of the movie, I think, where like Godzilla like is looking at all these humans that are like scurrying beneath it, and we see his atomic breath start to form, and then it cuts to like a classroom that's apparently several miles away, and like all the students and the teacher like look at this mushroom cloud which apparently Godzilla causes, and the teacher is like, an atom bomb, like it cannot be more blatant than that, you know? Like, yeah, almost too blatant. Like, I feel like by this point in the series, having a political allegory is like a trope of the Godzilla movies. So it's like, all right, we have to do that again. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really feel very sincere. And I think having it so blatant and so like presented through just like long stretches of dialogue, I feel like it's not, I don't know, it's just less interesting that way.
I love the themes in this movie. And this is where I have a real love-hate with it. I love and I hate this movie. But what I love, I really do grab onto. I think it's really interesting to make Godzilla not just a force of nature, but a spiritual being, and like tie it into Japanese spiritualism and mysticism. I found really interesting. And that moment that you talk about where Godzilla uses his atomic breath for the first time, and then we see that it caused a mushroom cloud. I found that very chilling, actually, as an image. Maybe it's because I just watched Oppenheimer, and I am already like, atomic bombs are the scariest thing in the world to me right now.
Understandably, yeah.
Yeah, nuclear war, right? Where that image loses its power then in this movie for me is that they do not repeat it.
Hmm.
Because yeah. Godzilla uses his atomic breath many times after that. to no such effect. But the first time it's used, I'm like, oh my God, this is, if Godzilla is a walking atom bomb, is he just dropping nukes all over Japan? This would be a terrifying way to take, to interpret his atomic breath.
Yeah.
But then they don't do anything with it. And I thought that was a real missed opportunity to present it and then take it away.
Yeah, I feel the same. And I think it, I think the same is true of like the theme of how all the people killed in the Pacific War by Japan, like manifesting themselves in Godzilla. That is an interesting idea. But I also don't think the movie really does anything with that. Like, that idea is presented, but then it kind of just becomes like a monster free for all, and it kind of abandons that, you know?
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, I kind of mentioned like the cheesy tongue in cheek vibe before, the really broad comedy, like the ridiculous characters, things like that. And it just is so difficult to pull off to have these two things together, like that really cheesy, look at how ridiculous we are vibe, and then like somber political commentary over here. It just does not work for me in this movie at all.
Yeah. Back to the spiritualness, there's a moment, this speaks to you, to what you're saying, where the movie presents this idea, and then by the end, it's completely forgotten about it, and it becomes a free-for-all. Ghidorah and Mothra, when they are defeated, they become like atomized spirits, and they infuse their spirits into Godzilla. And again, I went, oh, so just as the spirits of those lost in the war have infused themselves with Godzilla, what does it mean now that the guardian monsters are inside Godzilla? What does that mean? And the movie did not answer that. The movie didn't do anything with that. And I was like, so then like that was a choice you made with no seemingly no rhyme or reason.
Right. Like it doesn't seem like purposeful ambiguity where like we're meant to like ruminate on that or whatever. Like, because I think if you ponder it and you're like, oh, well, maybe like, you know, the souls of the victims are like, you know, like mixed up with like the perpetrators and we're all the same or whatever. Like, I feel like at a certain point, you're just like fumbling for ideas and it's just like, oh, there's probably nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. So you mentioned like the spiritualism and how that connects to Japanese society and cultural history and all that. I did like the, like there's kind of a theme of like the shrines that are being vandalized and like destroyed by a lot of different characters, including by like these young hooligans. Like there are two different gangs of young hooligans, like a biker gang and then just like some, I don't know, teenage vagrants or whatever, who are gonna like literally drown a dog. That's how terrible they are. And they're like destroying these like shrines and these statues in the shrines, I should say. And like I think that does kind of connect with like what the movie's trying to get across about how like modern Japan does not respect its history and like so like that is kind of compelling, but that to me is more compelling than like the victims of the Pacific War, like the A-bomb stuff, just because it seems a little bit more like organic to the story, I guess.
Yeah. And like these other themes, the movie kind of drops them as a driving narrative force when it just becomes monster mayhem. Which is fine. Like, it's a Godzilla movie. I'm here for the monster fights. Any other themes? I feel like we could talk about the monster fights with the aesthetics.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. I really enjoyed the Baragon and Godzilla fight.
Yeah.
It did throw me off that Godzilla was just able to explode Baragon. And I'm like, okay, he's dead now. Like, he's gone.
Yeah, he's toast. Yeah.
It didn't like bother me. That's not a critique. And in some ways, I appreciate the bold choice.
And then he does that to Ghidorah and Mothra too, right? He just like vaporizes them with his breath, basically.
Yeah. But again, sorry, that also is like, why did you introduce these guardian monsters who fail? They are not good at guarding Japan.
Yeah. And you said, like the fact that they're like atomized and they're like spirit, like just kind of dissipates or whatever. could like maybe it's intentional, but it's just like, there's nothing really there to latch on to if there is an idea, you know? I think, like I do like the Godzilla versus Baragon fight. First of all, I think that it goes on not that fight in particular, but just like the monster fights in general go on way too long. Like there's the Baragon fight and then Mothra and then Ghidorah, and they all seemingly die, but then like they somehow come back together because of that like shrine stone that's like dropped into the ocean. And then Godzilla falls into the ocean, and then Tachibara, right, goes down in his sub. It's like this should have ended half an hour ago. How is this movie so long?
Yeah, I feel like by the all right, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
So aesthetically speaking, I feel like the movie, I think it does do a good job of, no, I don't think it does. What the movie does do is it does blend suitmation with CGI. There's a ton of CGI in this movie that I think is a hallmark of the Millennium era. It's and in filmmaking in general, you're right, that early 2000s blockbuster trap of let's use the new technology
Yeah.
and let's throw this computer imagery in. Even James Bond fell victim to this with Die Another Day.
Yep.
It's one of the worst James Bond movies because of the CGI used in that movie.
Totally agree. Yeah. And I think of like, The Mummy and The Mummy Returns from the late 90s, like The Haunting. There's so many bad CGI movies from that era. It's, yeah. And that's what I was going to say before I started ranting about just how long it goes. I got a little ahead of myself. Sorry. But like, the suitmation stuff I think looks really good for the most part. Like that's the stuff that I like the most in this movie. But yeah, the CGI is not incorporated very well, and I think they use it as like an easy way out. Like there's a shot of like a ship, like an aircraft carrier or something that's in the ocean that just looks so bad, and
Yeah.
maybe lingers on that for maybe like, I don't know, longer than it needs to, 10 to 20 seconds maybe. And it's like, you could have just taken stock footage of like any ship in the ocean. Why did you feel the need to do this? And it's not a good look. Yeah.
I mean, like, I, if you love the special effects in this movie, everybody listening, please, like, I'm not, don't take it personally, but I am so baffled by all the reviews I've read and watched of people I respect saying that this is some of the best special effects work in a Godzilla movie. I'm like, we are not watching the same movie.
No. Yeah, I don't get that at all. There's one special effect in particular where like Godzilla rises out of the ocean and like a ship with two guys in it like flies into the air. And then there's a shot of the ship like plummeting back down towards the camera. It's which is clearly very fake. And like the face of one guy in the boat like comes right at the camera, you know? I'm not sure if you know what shot I'm talking about, but
Yeah.
it's bizarre. It's like very weird looking, but like it's I don't know. That shot in particular is like, that is not a good special effect. And I'm not sure. Yeah, it's not my style. I don't see it. I don't know.
CGI Mothra looks bad.
Yeah.
King Ghidorah as a computer, it looks like it does not, maybe it looked good then, but no, it is not a good look for the franchise.
Yeah. Well, sorry, one more example. So there's a very cool shot where it's a suitmation shot where Godzilla like throws Ghidorah against a hospital, and like clearly it's all like tactile buildings, and like one of Ghidorah's heads just like flails back sort of, and it looks really great. And then like a couple minutes later, or maybe it's earlier, we see like a CGI image of Ghidorah just like, I don't know, yeah, it looks like a Super Nintendo game, and he's just like hovering over the city. There's such a wide range of quality in the special effects in this movie. Some of them are good, and some of them are just like embarrassing, you know?
Yeah, like, ooh, again, it's not the only movie from the early 2000s to suffer from this CGI.
Yeah. Just to talk briefly about like the other aesthetics in the movie. I feel like usually if I'm not invested in the story, like they usually look very, very good. Like I felt that way about Son of Godzilla and Terror of Mechagodzilla. Like, not super invested in the movie, but they have a lot of very striking images. And here, I think I'm pretty sure it was shot digitally. I should probably check on that. But like, the images kind of just like look flat. There is not a lot of like dynamism to the visuals, you know? So like, there wasn't even that to kind of like maintain my interest this time.
Totally. And I think it's look, I don't need Godzilla to be a good character, whatever that means. I don't even need him to be a likable character. It's fine. He's a monster that's gonna wreak havoc. But the intentional choice to make this Godzilla evil and a bad guy, I think it for me, this could be taste. It took me out of the film in a way that was kind of like, look, I don't like the human characters because they're boring. You just smoked Baragon, who was the one I'm cheering for.
Yeah.
Now I'm left with just a mean Godzilla who kills teenagers in a hospital. And I'm just like, I don't like these types of movies. Why am I watching? It just didn't win me over.
Yeah, like it. I don't know. At first, I thought it was kind of refreshing that Godzilla is again like a villainous monster causing all this destruction. Like, because he gets a little bit too cuddly and like Son of Godzilla and stuff like that, you know. But it goes too far in that direction. Like, I think Godzilla used to be an actual character with like depth and complexity, and now it's sort of just like all good or all bad. Like, it's not, it, at least in this movie and Son of Godzilla and some other ones, it's not very interesting anymore, you know?
Yeah, like, make him a bad guy, but give us a way in to care, if not about him, about the situation he's in. Because if this Godzilla is made up of the spirits of those killed, sure, their motivation may still be revenge. But revenge in and of itself is not interesting to watch. Like, revenge why? Because you were a little girl who was murdered by Japanese bombings? Like, what's the backstory here?
Right.
Get me invested in the revenge.
Yeah, it right. Like, that's why I think that it's like playing at political allegory, but it's not really trying to say anything, you know?
Very surface.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the theme. I just feel like the movie ultimately didn't do anything with it.
Right. And like, I don't know. I know I mentioned this before, but I go back. So like, there's he's a pretty funny character. He works for like the digital production company, and he's like apparently wearing a really bad wig. And there's like a running joke about like how he's very insecure about it and all this stuff. And he just like pops up out of nowhere repeatedly. Like, that's kind of funny. I laughed at that several times, but then like, I just don't. This movie at least is not able to like pull off that and like sincere commentary. It just can't do it.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else I can say in my breakdown.
Yeah, I think I can too.
Great.
So yeah, like initially I liked the fact that Godzilla is mean and like very destructive and violent, but that gets kind of repetitive after a while. There are some striking shots. Like, I think when Ghidorah is battling Godzilla and sort of like sends an atomic breath blast back at him, and then like there's tons of explosions and Godzilla like stumbles back into the water, that looks great. It looks very cool. And like, for a second, I was like, ooh, this battle's getting good. And then bad CGI happens like a second later and I'm out of it again. So I think there are like individual shots and moments that are interesting, or at least like look vivid and interesting, but they don't last very long, and that's all I have to say for my good category. Yeah, that's all I get.
All right. Hey, I truly love Baragon in this movie. I cheered out loud, especially after watching Frankenstein Conquers the World.
Yeah,
didn't like him in that movie as much as I did in this one, so it was good. I love the new takes on the characters, tying them into some sort of ancient mythology. I thought was really interesting, along with all that spooky atmosphere established in the beginning. I wanted more of that.
Huh. Well, just for clarification, because I'm not saying that there isn't any, but like, what kind of spooky atmosphere are you referring to?
When Yuri and her cohorts are like in the woods, there's a lot of fog, there's a lot of like dark woods, and there's that man who mysteriously appears and disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I was thinking also just now when you were talking, like the fact that Ghidorah is sort of like trapped in like the underground ice or whatever, like that's pretty cool. That's a good mysterious image. So yeah, I agree. There's some good stuff like that in there.
Bad stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll just summarize it by saying like nothing really distinguishes this movie to me, you know? Like I feel like my favorite Godzilla movies, like or maybe I'll just say kaiju movies in general. Like Rodan is very scary. Mothra is like very surreal and like bizarre. Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, looks so beautiful and like stunningly stylish. With this, it's like we've seen the journalist thing before. We've seen the monster all-out battle before. We've even seen kind of like the CGI in Shin Godzilla, although it's done a lot better in Shin Godzilla. So in this case, it's sort of just like this. It's I've seen it, and there's nothing to really stand out in this movie to me. I guess I'll just say that as like an encapsulation of all the bad stuff for me.
Well said. There's like some specific things I forgot. The Shobijin show up for 30 seconds.
I don't think I even remember that.
Yep.
When did they show up?
Just to like be like, oh, Mothra's here.
Wow.
Maybe I could be conflating that with a different Millennium movie. Listeners, check me on that. My note is simply Shobijin question mark. So either that, or I'm saying to myself, where were the Shobijin if Mothra shows up?
They very well could have been in there. I might have just missed them. I should also ask, did you watch the Japanese language version or the dubbed version? Okay. I watched the dubbed one. Maybe they're slightly different. That could be.
Oh, maybe. And the whole ending just kind of devolved into nonsense for me, like getting the sub getting swallowed. Godzilla blowing itself up, the heart at the bottom of the ocean. I'm like, that's a cool visual, but story-wise, what is that telling me? That Godzilla can come from just its heart, like a Frankenstein conquers the world, but like nothing in this movie tells me that that's possible.
Right.
So just like from a script, I'm like, that's cool, but that doesn't do anything for the story.
Yeah, I feel like plot-wise, it might actually make more sense for like a disembodied spirit of Godzilla to like form it, like in the cosmos or something, you know? That at least connects to what's happened earlier in the movie, but the heart thing doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I was kind of just like, all right, movie, whatever you're doing now, I guess I'm along for the ride. And I guess one more bad thing. I'm sorry. Like this movie's way too long. It's like an hour and 45 minutes. I know I alluded to this before, but like something like this should be like an hour 20 at the most, you know? Like I totally lost interest towards the end there.
Any campy things for you?
You mentioned the old guy who just like shows up and like disappears at random. That's very campy to me. Because we never even learn who he is or like why. Well, we learn that apparently he died in 1954 after the initial Godzilla attack, and now apparently his ghost is still around to sort of like provide sagacious wisdom to the protagonists or whatever. But like it's so ridiculous. Like that is lifted directly out of so many bad horror movies where like the old guy like dispenses wisdom and then vanishes, you know? It's kind of amusing, but it's yeah,
I
not really
agree.
very
Not a
intelligent.
criticism. It's a fun thing.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the dub version, but in the beginning of the movie, there's like a briefing with some Japanese military people, cadets maybe, and one of them does an aside to his colleague, and he says that there was an attack on New York City in 1998. The Americans think it's Godzilla, but we're not so sure. That's a reference to the TriStar Godzilla from 1998.
That is a great joke slash burn. I like that moment too. Yeah.
It's a great dig. And then again, I think this movie starts very strong, but by the end, it's lost all of what it has established, and just kind of devolves into a really bad CGI mess.
Yeah, indeed. It's too bad. There are like little moments peppered throughout, but I don't think they're enough to carry the movie.
No.
Sorry, do you mind one more campy thing?
Go.
One of the guys who's like in love with Yuri apparently is like, he's another, I don't know, cameraman or something, like a journalist or whatever for like the digital production company. And he's always dressed like he's like an 8-year-old kid. Like he wears like backwards baseball caps and like very like bright colored shirts, even though he's clearly a fully grown man. I don't know if that's campy, but it's very ridiculous and very funny to me. So I appreciated that too. And he overacts in a very, very entertaining way.
That's fun.
Wanted to bring him up.
Yeah. Again, people, there's a lot I love about this movie. But ultimately, when it comes down to my final rating, we'll see where I stand. So, Matt, you want to read the criteria here?
Yeah, sure. So our top rating is it is a timeless classic and definitely stands the test of time. Our second rating, there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and stands the test of time. Number three, it may be historically significant or just fun, but it does not stand the test of time. And our lowest rating, it's not worth revisiting and definitely does not stand the test of time.
I think it has a lot of great moments, but ultimately, I don't think it stands the test of time. Even in the Millennium series, I think there are stronger entries. And I think that GMK, I think I was so hyped on this movie that I came away sorely want I came away wanting more.
Yeah, totally makes sense to me. That's my response as well. I won't give it the lowest rating because there are some like amusing, strange moments. I do like some of the Suitmation fights. They look pretty good, like intermittently. But yeah, overall, I got the sense that like they were trying to make money off of this. They were doing what's been done before, and there's nothing that really stands out to me in this movie.
All right, everybody, thank you for hanging out. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com or Instagram for more monster movie content. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with theme music by Terrence Jackson and Minya's Mailbox by Ben Cook Phelps. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Your source for real estate, home rehab, fixing, and flipping for investor clients and residential buyers. Reach out to the Zach Pack today for real estate services. Follow the Zach Pack on social media and contact the Zach Pack for investment opportunities. Links in the bio.
Godzilla!